Welcome in to episode 37 of Grinding the Edge here on South Harmon. I'm your host, Koopa. You can find me on X at Dynasty Koopa, and also on Discord or Blue Sky at Koopa Troopa 8. Feel free to always get in contact with me if you have any questions about anything that I talk about on these episodes. I'm always willing to answer your questions and find out what it exactly it is that I can either do to help, clarify, or anything like that. This week I'm going to be talking about a metric that we use over here at South Harmon. It's called the CUC score, stands for Quarterbacks Under Constant Chaos, and it is developed by Maddie Kiwoom as part of the South Harmon team. If you want to get access to this score and other cool things at South Harmon, go to patreon.com/South Harmon and sign up for the pregame pooper tier. That's where we share some of our data that we generate. It's also where we talk about all kinds of stuff. And if you are really into the data of fantasy football, that is absolutely the place that you want to be. You want to be able to talk to us about not only how we develop these, but also talk about what sort of takeaways we're getting from them. Now, the CUC score is a matchup model that tries to predict and highlight the most advantageous wide receiver versus cornerback matchups for the upcoming week. Maddie Kiwoom uses his weekly wide receiver ranks and the cornerback rankings from Player Profiler in order to compare a couple metrics for both the positions. He looks at targets versus targets allowed, catch rate versus catch rate allowed, and fantasy points per game versus fantasy points allowed per game. He utilizes the Vegas implied totals to boost wide receiver scores if their teams are supposed to score a lot of points. And the idea is to give you an idea of which wide receivers are going up against cornerbacks who give them an advantageous matchup. We want to see higher scores in this metric, which mean that you tend to have a stronger wide receiver going against a weaker corner. Now, what is important is to look at these scores and understand that it's not just a how good is this matchup for the wide receiver, it's also combining the metric of how good is that wide receiver in the first place. There is a zero on the number line, but that zero is not a zero that means anything above this point is positive and anything below this point is negative. It's more of a result of how the math checks out. So, what I wanted to do was do two things. First, I wanted to look at, is this score even useful? Maddie has gone through, and he's been doing this for 2 years now, utilizing the CUC score and putting out all these numbers. But is this actually something that is giving us a benefit to our fantasy teams? And is it something that, as we're getting into playoffs, that you're going to want to use to help make sure that you have some advantageous matchups on your teams and not on your opponents? So I'm going through the process that I take to do analysis of this type of thing, and I will let you know if you are listening to this on Saturday, the day the episode comes out. Maddie is also listening to this, so for him, this is a situation where he does not know the result of this, and it is not biased in any way. I am more than willing to say that this score does not work, and it is something that we need to work on refining. So obviously, in order to compare whether this is actually giving us a benefit or not, I need something to compare it against. And the thing I chose to compare it against is the sleeper weekly projections. It is a very easy statistic. It's right there for all of us. I'm sure anybody that has gone to set your lineup in Sleeper has looked at those projections and gone, well, this says that this player is going to get more points, so I should probably just follow that and put that player in my lineup. When you're deciding between two wide receivers and one is saying to score 9 points and the other says that they will score 6, I should probably just follow the 9-point receiver. So I wanted to go through, and the first thing is just figure out, are the projections even accurate? And at what rate are they accurate? So I went through, looked at all the data for every single wide receiver that has been modeled by the CUC score this season. So all the way back to week 10 through week 14. It is only 5 weeks of data, but We need all the data from the previous 9 weeks in order to inform the cornerback model and the wide receiver model, since it is a season-by-season metric. So it is a little bit limited, but we still do end up with quite a few data points. We end up with a total of 358, and all of those data points are going to be informing these results. In general, the projection metric in terms of how many receivers are shooting above their projection on a week-to-week basis is 48.2%. Now, when you think about it, it's like, oh, that kind of sounds like that sleeper is less than average. Like, if you just randomly tried to guess higher or lower on projections, you should just guess lower most of the time, and you will come out on top. And yes, that is true. But if you think about how injuries affect players, that means that there's going to be some players, they get injured and they do not hit their projection. Whereas projections are made with the idea of that players are going to always be healthy for the entire game. And the players that are being modeled by the Cux score are not the ones that are going to be coming and subbing in. If the starter goes down and the backup has a better day and they end up exceeding their projection, that's not modeled here. We're cutting those guys out because those guys are not supposed to have a standard matchup against another opposing cornerback. So that 48.2% kind of gives us a little bit of a number of, we expect that about 1.8% of players, no matter what, they're just going to get injured and not exceed their projection expectation. Now, that gives us a good little tidbit of just something extra to pay attention to. But the important thing to know is that we're trying to shoot for better than 48.2%. So, what I have now done is I've gone through and performed this analysis for various ranges of the Cux score. So, the first area that I looked at was I want to know what range of the Cux score is one where higher than this range, I have a better than average expectation compared to projections. So I've plotted for every score, whether you were above or below projection, going all the way from the highest score of 242.5 all the way down to negative 156. And what we would expect if we see that this is better at the higher range versus the lower range, is we would see a graph where there is a peak in the middle. Because what that would mean is that when you start at the high range, you're going to have some variance where you're going to go up and down, and it's not perfect. It's not that every single receiver that gets a higher than 150 Cux score is going to have a better than average week. Instead, you see the variance, but you should see it continue to rise above that 48.2%. And then at a certain point, you might see it turn, and you'll see a peak, and it will turn and it will level back down towards that 48.2%. So, looking at the results of the Cux score, I see a pretty clear peak when I'm looking at this graph. And that peak happens right around a Cux score of 94. Now, that peak at 94, what that means is that everything that is higher than a 94 is going to be beneficial. It means that it is better than using projections. And so if you are looking at two players who have similar projections in your lineup, but one of them has a Cux score that is higher than 94, then we want to put that player who has the higher Cux score into our lineup. It does not mean that we want to use the Cux score to bench a stud wide receiver who has a lower one. Let's say a week where CeeDee Lamb has a Cux score of 60. That does not mean you want to bench him in favor of a Darnell Mooney who has a score of 114. The projections are still going to be different, and the chance that you are going to get more points out of your CeeDee Lamb is still much higher because of how different those projections are. But what it is important for is on that week where Darnell Mooney has 114, if you're trying to compare him to a player with a similar projection, which might be, say, Jordan Addison, then you want to go for that Darnell Mooney. So now that we've looked at above 94, I wanted to check and see if there was any range past this point where we saw a similar behavior. And in our case, there really isn't. There's a little bit of a spike if you cut out everything above 94 at around the 77 mark. However, if you're looking at that point, the number of receivers in that data set is only a total of 20. And the spike is only a 4% spike. So when you're talking about a 4% spike in a sample of 20, that is within margin of error of literally one wide receiver. And so that is too small of a difference for me to be like, I need to actually draw a conclusion from this. In our case, when we are looking at the difference above 94, that number is 55%. And that 55% compared to the average is 7.5%. And we're looking at 70 receivers. So we're looking at a difference of, hey, we have gotten an improvement of at least 4 receivers across this data set. To me, that is enough of a difference that it is worth saying that it is working in this range. Now, of course, when you're looking at the NFL and variance and all those sorts of things, you have to account for all of that. And the only way to account with that is more data. And we play in a world of football where there is not that much data. In the grand scheme of things, in terms of trying to do a large data-centric metric, you don't have thousands upon thousands of data points to plug in. So you have to try and draw these conclusions off of some of these limited data sets. So that's why I am saying I'm only using 70 points of data for this. That's just what we have. Now, the other thing I wanted to do was see if it worked as a negative metric. Is there a certain point in time where if they are so far in the negative that we can draw a conclusion that just under no circumstances should you start this player? And what I found when looking at this is that kind of there is. There is a clear spike in terms of a negative spike around the negative 80 or so mark. And the other problem is all the receivers in this range are just not very good. I'm going to read off all the receivers in this range from week 10, so that way you can see what I'm talking about. Those receivers are Mason Tipton, Kevontae Turpin, Robert Woods, Calvin Austin, Adonai Mitchell, Devon Vele, Xavier Worthy, Trey Palmer, Andre Yosivas, Parker Washington, Jahan Dotson. Those are the only receivers that were below that negative 80. And all of these guys were players that if they were in your lineup, they were in there as a complete desperation play. There were two that exceeded their expectation that week. Those were Adonai Mitchell and Devon Vele. But those are the only two out of that entire list. And so what I see from this is that if you have a receiver where you need to put them in as a desperation play, you might want to look for anyone higher than negative 80 on this list to plug in instead. Like, can you try and find yourself this same week? You could have gone with Kayshon Boutte. You could have gone with Tim Patrick, although Tim Patrick ended up not working out for you. You could have gone with Gabe Davis. You could have gone with Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. Like, players like that where they at least don't have the worst matchup in front of them, and they have a chance to at least be as accurate as the normal sleeper projections. Really, what we're identifying each week is a range of a couple players, which usually is somewhere between like 10 to 15 or 20 players who are likely to exceed their normal projections. And then we're also seeing a list of maybe another 10 players a week who are not likely to exceed their expectation. So we can use this in our lineup leagues to help us out. Obviously, the ones that are likely not to are usually going to be those players who you would not be starting if you're competing in the first place. Those players who are likely to exceed are often going to be those players that we are starting on a given week. It's just letting us have a little bit of warning potentially of when those spikes might be. When you see Amon-Ra St. Brown have a Cuck score of 222, it's not surprising when he goes off and he scores more than double of his already top of the league projection. Same thing goes with Ja'Marr Chase. When he has a score of 208, or he even has a score of 110. It's not surprising that both of those weeks, he drastically exceeded his projections and scored way more points for your teams. So the important ones to really look at are when you have a receiver who is not projected to usually be up in there, and he ends up having a Cuck score up in that range. An example of that might be Ray-Ray McCloud's week 14, where he scored 15.1 points off of a projection of 7.8, but he had a Cuck score of 97.3. Or maybe you're looking back to week 12, and Noah Brown had a Cuck score of 96, and he scored 13.1 points off of a projection of 7.99. Or Jalen Tolbert, who that same week scored 10.2 off of a projection of 6.58. It's guys like that where we can identify these have an opportunity to exceed their expectation, and those are potentially guys that you want to slot in when either you have bye week problems, injury problems, or maybe you just have a really deep league. And they can help you make some of those decisions. If you were trying to decide, should I start Noah Brown this week, or should I start Ricky Pearsall? Well, Noah Brown was in that range of the Cuck score that he was significantly higher than Ricky Pearsall. So you should have benched Ricky Pearsall and started Noah Brown, despite the fact that their projections were different by 0.02. So that's what it's primarily helpful for. What you don't want to do is say, hey, Puka Nacua, he has a Cuck score of 32, and my Noah Brown, he has a Cuck score of 96. I want to start Noah Brown over Puka Nacua. That's not the case. Puka Nacua is still going to get used like Puka Nacua, and you can see that in terms of that week. His projection was still 15.73, and he still managed to exceed it because he still has that 48% chance of exceeding his expectation, and he got 20.7 points on the week. Noah Brown still exceeded his expectation as well, like the Cuck score gave us that extra 7% advantage on. But his exceeding projection is so much lower that you didn't want to just start Noah Brown willy-nilly over anybody else on your team. So that's how I'm going to be using it this week for my teams. I'm going to be looking at the results of the Cuck score for week 15 and looking for some players who I might not have started initially that maybe I want to try and start now. Some examples of that: Calvin Ridley, Jacoby Myers, Darnell Mooney. All three of them right now have a Cuck score higher than 94, and they're guys that maybe you thought about benching for somebody else. I would also add Juwan Jennings to this list, except for that he already played. And unfortunately, we already know that Juwan Jennings did not have a great night last night, just like anybody in that game of the 49ers versus the Rams. Despite getting 9 targets, Juwan Jennings only got 2 receptions for 31 yards. And that just comes out underneath his projection, but that happened with basically everyone in that game. There were some extenuating circumstances that were not properly captured by projection metrics, and both these teams decided to try and run the ball, and they still didn't even do that very effectively. So that's what I'm going to be doing this week based on the Cuck score. I'm going to be looking at my teams where, hey, Does Jacoby Myers make sense to put in over somebody else in my flex? What do the projections look like? Myers is likely to exceed his better than another player. Same thing goes with Calvin Ridley and all the normal guys that you see in your lineup. Terry McLaurin, Khalil Shakir, CeeDee Lamb, Amon-Ra St. Brown, all those guys that you kind of expect to see them towards the top of that list. And so those are guys that you likely were already starting to begin with. On the flip side, it makes a couple of the sitting decisions easier. If you saw Tim Patrick's week from last week, you might be inclined to try and start him this week. But you see he has a cuck score of negative 124. I'm going to be making sure that I'm just not going to try and chase last week's data. Same thing goes with Michael Pittman and Jalen McMillan. Both of them have highly negative cuck scores, and I do not want to touch them unless I absolutely need to in my lineup. If I have a better option, which hopefully if I'm competing I do, then I'm going to be starting that other player. Once again, if you want to look at the full list of the cuck score, go to patreon.com/southharmon and sign up for the pregame pooper tier. That's what gets you access to these scores and the Wrinkled Brains channel, where we talk about data and where we discuss how we use them, where they come from, all sorts of things like that. Now I'm going to get into the last two sections of this podcast, which I've done every week. The first one is the number of players rostered on every team. Quarterbacks has gone down by one, down to 59. I think this is just an element of we're getting towards the end of the season. People are starting to drop those backups a little bit more than they previously had because they need some extra roster spots here and there to fill up with injuries. And some of those injuries that they need to fill up are at the running back position. We are seeing the 49ers running back room go into complete, total, and utter chaos. And we also are seeing that Sincere McCormick has completely transformed the Las Vegas Raiders running back room. So running backs have gone up by two this past week, presumably because people are going out and picking up those other running backs. Even though Patrick Taylor did not end up becoming the primary running back on Thursday night, the fact that that was a possibility caused a lot of people to go out and pick him up. Wide receivers and tight ends, they have stayed the same from last week, most likely because we just have not had many changes at either of those positions. Finally, for the tight ends don't matter segment. Last week, I chose Foster Moreau to give us 2 receptions for 40 yards. And we have an additional 6 points from the tight end. That is totally fine. Now, I could decide to roll with Foster Moreau again, but there's another player that I like to take a shot on because I've just liked him in the past, and I want to believe in him. And that is Stone Smart. He has a matchup against the 27th best tight end defense in Tampa Bay, which means it's a really good matchup for tight ends. Whereas Foster Moreau is going against the Washington Commanders, who are basically a middle-of-the-road matchup at 13th. But Stone Smart is going to be taking over because Will Dissly is injured. And I've always liked Stone Smart. He's been somebody who has had a couple of really random long touchdown plays or really long receptions in his career. And I want to see what that looks like when he is the starting tight end for a week. So I'm going to plug Stone Smart into my lineup and hope that I can capture some potential tight end magic in the first week of playoffs. That's everything that I have for you this week. Go check out our website, southharmonff.com. Check out the Patreon, patreon.com/southharmon, or look down in the description for our sponsors, Manscaped and Ultimate Autographs. That's everything for this week, so stay sharp and keep grinding that edge. I'll see you next week.